Babbage Archives. I'll take these up a box at a time.
So here I am in the archives of and the storage area, do you call it? We're not allowed to say where we are, but we're in the in some part of the Powerhouse Museum, and I'm with Matthew Connell. And Matthew has a project called Email Australia that he's working with Nine MSN here in Australia. So can you just describe what Email Australia is about, the project?
I can indeed. It's a it's being run as a competition. We're asking people to submit emails within various categories, their favourite emails, some of which we will choose to put on public display, but all of which we're planning to take and create Australia's first archive of emails.
And is this being done elsewhere in the world?
It's been done in England. There was an email written, and we're doing Email Australia for the same reason. The British Library did it in England, but what we're interested in. In the powerhouse here, we've been interested in emails for some time. We're interested in all sorts of society-changing technologies. Email certainly fits the bill. And I've been particularly interested in the issue of the preservation of digital records. And I'm very concerned that in years to come, the information that we routinely exchange in emails is not going to be available for anyone else. One of the reasons I'm particularly worried is because I have the luxury of being able to read letters like these.
What have we got here?
These are some of the letters that we have that were written to Charles Babbage by his colleagues, by his friends, by people from his time.
We'll backtrack a little bit here. Yeah. So the Powerhouse Museum is interested in science and technology and design and recording that.
Yeah.
And Charles Babbage is one of the founders of the computing industry from the early half of the 19th century, am I correct?
Charles Babbage is regarded as the grandfather, if you like, of computing by virtue of his having designed and partially built the first fully automatic calculating machine, being his difference engine, but then going on to design the analytical engine, which was a much more versatile machine, one that could take new instructions and effectively took programs. So, you know, Babbage's analytical engine had more or less the same architecture as the modern electronic computer.
And one of the things that we sometimes think is these people work in isolation, that they are, thanks to the special machine behind us that is protecting us, one of these things we're going back that we think about these people is they work alone, that they are individuals, that they don't have a network of people that they work with.
Oh, that's right. But in fact, there they go again. Babbage had an extraordinary network of people. Many of them polymaths like he was. We look back at the amount of work that he did, and he was not just a designer of computing machines. He was a mathematician. He was a reformer. He wrote some of the earliest textbooks or earliest books on political economy. He wrote a special book on the economy of manufactures. He was, through his work on the engine, ended up pioneering aspects of precision machining. He was a bit of a stirrer as well. He was reformed aspects of English mathematics. He was an inventor. He invented ophthalmoscopes and cow catchers for trains and data loggers and all sorts of things. But he was friends with a lot of other people who were also engaged in all the areas of science that took their imagination. He was very good friends with John Herschel, who became the Astronomer Royal. He was good friends with Charles Wheatstone, who invented the telegraph system, discovered stereopsis. He was friends with Henry Fox Talbot, who was the English inventor of photography. He was very, very well connected. In fact, Babbage in his day was one of the doyens of London society.
How do we know that?
Well, we know partly because we have records of his correspondence with people. In fact, we know that Babbage had parties at his house and that invitations to his parties were highly sought after. And we have here lots of cards from people. replies saying that they would like to attend events.
And so those were handwritten by Babbage or...
Handwritten and sent to Babbage.
Right.
Probably carried to Babbage by the, I would suggest, the servants of the
yes.
people who wrote the cards, indicating their interest in attending parties at his house. Babbage loved to throw a party. And in fact, one very important meeting at a party at his house was with a young woman who was taken to Babbage's house by Mary Somerville. Mary Somerville was one of the very few English, British women mathematician of the day. And she took a young Ada Augusta Byron to Babbage's house. Ada was the daughter of Lord Byron. She was about 17 years old and was being introduced to society in London. And in fact, these are two items we have. One is a card from her when she was the Countess of Lovelace. She married the Earl of Lovelace.
And that's her calling card. So
it's her calling card. And it's very intriguingly, it is written on the back, very interesting. We don't know what was very interesting, but it's fun to stare at.
It's sort of like, maybe it's the lol of the day. You know, it's like, you know, just the
speech.
Could
be the lol, that's yeah. right. Could be the laugh out loud.
Yep.
Although it's more likely to be the intriguing of the day. This is just a fragment of a letter exhorting Babbage to come and visit them if he has an opportunity. They often lived out of London.
And it's AL at the bottom, as you'll notice. Yeah, I picked that up earlier, actually, when we were looking through the boxes. So,
but Ada was taken. Babbage routinely, well, when he threw his parties, he used to do a dissertation to the people who attended, using a fragment of the difference engine that he had assembled to talk about his theory of miracles. And he commented in his biography about how people would watch frequently, having no idea what he was talking about, but that didn't bother him at all.
Sounds like a normal geek, you know, showing off his latest toy.
That's right. And happy to laugh at their conceits as they pretended to understand what he was saying. But Ada, it seems, was more able to understand what he was talking about, and her comments to him after the lecture was over impressed him, and he then agreed to be her mathematics tutor at that stage. Although later, Augustus de Morgan became her mathematics tutor, someone we mentioned earlier.
Yes.
So we're lucky. We're very privileged.
We have a record.
Access to these we call them primary evidence. Letters can provide all sorts of interesting information. They show connections. They may speak about events. There may actually be details of people's lives. This is a letter from Thomas Brunel to Babbage. So, you know, we know that...
they at least corresponded.
They corresponded. We know that, mm-hmm. that Babbage was contracted to work for the Brunel on their railway line. And it gives us a sense of the networks of the time. It can tell us about events that took place, the projects that they undertook. If you're lucky, some letters even contain ideas that are being expounded upon. But the other thing is they talk about the lives of the people involved, and sometimes very personal details. The Victorians quite often wrote very personally. Sometimes you get the impression that corresponding to each other was something like maybe their equivalent of going to speak to a psychiatrist. So,
okay.
So revealing some of the personal...
Or, you know, chatting maybe on MSN or something like that. You tend to think that, you
Not
know...
Not that I've ever done that.
No, but, you know, theoretically, yeah.
One day I'll get on top of this...
technology stuff. Which brings us back to the present day, which is, you know, we live in an electronic world, like email, MSN chat, websites. And I've had a personal experience of trying to retrieve a friend's email from 8 years ago in Outlook Express and bring it into Mac Office 2008. And even that is not easy. So what does the future hold for...
Well, this is our concern, and this is why we've embarked on the Email Australia project. We're very interested in emails. By their nature, are ephemeral. People don't think to keep them the way they might keep letters. They may keep them because they may not bother to throw them out, but they may also not bother to file them. They might keep, you know, one amongst thousands. They might remember the details or how to find it. If they know who it is, they can search for it. But the fact is that there's something more ephemeral about electronic mail that makes them more susceptible to loss.
Well, why can't I just put it on a CD or a disc?
Well, that's a good question. Apart from the way in which we think about them and can conceive of them, there's the actual storage of electronic formats or of digital formats. Here are a few that I have in my room. And in fact, files on these two beasts were written by me in the late 90s. No, sorry, early 90s.
Yes.
Early 90s. I can read this one because we still have a 3.5-inch drive in the department in case people want stuff from old files. We no longer have a working 5.25. If we did, we could see my Word for DOS files. I'm not sure whether Word for Windows opens it or not. I'm not sure whether my Windows opens it. It might do. I could probably get around it. Sorry, this one is what?
That's a big 8-inch one.
Yep, that's an 8-inch one. And I don't know what's
on what format there. Is it?
I don't know what the format is. And I wouldn't like to try and retrieve the information from that. This is a magnetic tape. It's possible that we could get the data off that. There are people who keep tape readers working. But the chances are that this is so old that as it went through the read heads, the oxide layer would peel off the tape as it went through. We might be able to get the data off as long as we didn't bugger up any of the formatting sectors as we went through.
Yep.
So,
well, there's a chance of destroying it as you're reading it, I think is the point on that as well, on all of these media, because there's physical touching.
That's right. Mm. So this information, we know these are 150-plus, approaching 200-year-old. These letters, we'll be reading them in 100 years, the way we're keeping them now, possibly 200 years. And indeed, if we start to panic, we can photograph them, and we can still read them. These ones that require a machine to read them.
As you said, that one, this 5.25-inch floppy is probably only 20 years old.
That's right.
And
it's 20 years old and it's more or less unreadable. The other thing is, I mean, the problem is not just the media being fragile. The machines required to read them aren't necessarily available. And the
format.
They may be difficult to come by as well. So, for a variety of reasons, there's not much in the way of longevity with these formats, and that's our problem. So, with the email archive, we've decided to ask Australians if they will submit their emails, and indeed they have done so.
Yes.
We're going to keep
them. I think multiple thousands of the people whose emails have been submitted.
That's right.
Yep.
And we're delighted to have all of them. And we're going to try and store them in electronic format. We're probably going to use some form of XML to store those in electronic format for as long as we possibly can, because an email is in fact an electronic document. Authentically, that's what it is. But just as a precaution, we're going to print them all out as well and store them
in a similar way.
In a similar way to these letters from to child baggage.
So that the historians and museum creators of the future, if someone actually they find someone as interesting, as many people probably are, that they don't realise it, they can actually take that and use that in their research.
Well, there may be material there that relates to people who are going to become important, but just the record of the communications of everyday people. Just a sense of what people thought was important in their daily written communications is valuable to us. And so we're interested in their jokes. As we know, email is a medium for telling jokes.
My mother keeps sending me those. Yes.
Right. And but they're also, you know, families use emails to keep in contact. Current events are quite often communicated using email. As it turns out, in some instances when no other medium is available. So we know from email servers that are still running in countries where there are difficulties and other media are shut down. Sometimes knowledge of what's happening in...
The emails get through, and I think we had some examples of that actually this week with the Chinese earthquake, where actually the news came through on Twitter through an electronic means to the rest of the world before, you know, other means, because, you know, someone... Right. Yeah, which is just absolutely, you know, amazing that we can communicate that fast as humans.
Yeah.
But the question is, how long is that record going to stay?
So we're hoping, we believe, our archive will present some sort of evidence of our time to future generations. I mean, we're going to study it ourselves to see whether there are any patterns that we don't understand emerging from there. It's always good to have a think about your own lives. But certainly future generations will have an opportunity where they might not otherwise have been able to look back at what we were thinking and talking about.